Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, good afternoon. Jim and Jamal Potts back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for taking your Sunday evening or your Sunday afternoon and spending it with us. We really do appreciate that. How you doing, Jamal?
Hey, I'm doing great. Feeling better in high spirits. Work has been crazy, but other than that, I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad to be working.
Well, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You were talking about the getting a little cabin fever. You getting past that a little bit now?
I'm getting past it, man. I heard there might be another big stimulus check coming, so that got my got me feeling a little bit better.
Another stimulus check coming. Yeah, good luck on that one. At any rate, hey, listen, as you guys know, if you need to call us, you have any questions that you'd like to or comments you'd like to share, I always like giving you the phone number at the outset. That's 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. If you'd like to call in, if you have any comments you want to share, or and the number's on the website as well. Or, as so many people do, you can email us at listenup with JP at pottsandassociates.com. That's listenup with JP at pottsandassociates.com. And if you want to get our email every week letting you know what the topic is going to be about our upcoming shows, you can text your Potts Associates and text that 22828 and enter your email address. Again, text to Potts Associates and text that to 22828. Enter your email address and you'll get the topics each week. Well, today we've got a special guest, Jamal. Dr. Charles Potts is going to be on the air after I get through reading my emails. For those of you that might be curious, when I say Dr. Potts, that yes, that is my older brother, Jamal's uncle, obviously. So your uncle's going to be on today, Jamal.
That's exciting.
And Charles has some expertise as a medical director working within the prison system. So last week I actually mentioned that it'd be interesting to get a perspective because of all these people being released because of the pandemic, getting out early. So spoke to him during the week, and he'd be more than glad to give us some insight in terms of the inner workings of the medical procedures, et cetera, within the prison system. Right now, we still want to send a shout out, as we do every week, to the first responders, nurses, doctors, and everybody out there that's doing so much to get us all back to normal, so to speak. And they're working very hard. Please remember the first responders in your neighborhood. Let them know you're very supportive. Do whatever you have to do. Send an email, send whatever it takes, because they're really working hard on our behalf. Don't forget law enforcement. You guys know I'm former law enforcement. We've had a number of them that have passed away, nurses that have passed away, people that have been really working hard to get this country back on its feet from this pandemic. So let's not forget those people. All right, let's talk about some emails real quick. All right, Jim. You ask your listeners for opinions, and here's mine. I think there's a difference between releasing prisoners and inmates in a county lockup. Those individuals may be in there just simply awaiting trial. They're on bond, whatever the case may be, but that's not a prison situation. They are in county facilities, et cetera. Now, the county inmates, in my opinion, are low risk and should be released. The care that they get as prisoners is a lot different, but they should stay there. That's just my opinion. Yes, okay, well, that's good, but we don't want to forget that anybody getting released, please understand, they could get released, but they could still get out and get the virus, quite frankly. The point that was being made in the general media these days and opinions that are being offered, of course, are keep them inside. Now, Jamal, you know, we talked about that last week as well. That's one of the reasons why we're going to talk to your uncle today to find out, look, releasing these people back out in the general population, why can't they stay inside? This is signed by Sarah from Phoenix, Arizona. So, Sarah, you know, hang on. Hopefully you're listening today. You sent the email, and we'll have a little bit more insight into that as well. All right. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Jim, it appears that your show has made an adjustment from domestic and international terrorism to discussing other types of ongoing news, such as the coronavirus. I think you guys have made an excellent transition. Having said all of that, what is your opinion about China being sued because of the virus? Okay, and that's signed Johnny, Seattle, Washington. Well, look, basically, and Johnny, you are correct. When we first started out with this, we were talking about domestic terrorism and international terrorism. Because, as you know, I was, if you were a regular listener, let's put it that way, I was a terrorist investigator. And was a lot that we were looking at, things we were doing to help businesses prepare for active shooter, et cetera. That is true. Right now, our focus is going to be on the coronavirus and the pandemic because we are transitioning to talk about other things that are a little bit more newsworthy. So moving forward, the listeners, you should know that we are, in fact, going to be talking about other newsworthy events throughout the week. What do you think about that, Jamal? Opening it up a little bit.
I'm excited about that. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It will be. Now, the question, though, Jamal, they're asking about whether or not, you know, this issue about China being sued. What's your opinion?
Well, they're being sued. You know, when it comes to suit, everything's a lawsuit nowadays. I've seen people sue for being on a cell phone or tripping in a water fountain at the mall to... You know, people spilling coffee on themselves at McDonald's and suing McDonald's for spilling coffee on themselves. So, hey, I guess why not, you know?
Well, let me just tell you, though, in all honesty, okay, I kind of led you down the primrose path on that. And, yes, China is being sued, and I'm telling you from different directions. Right now, there are a number of class action lawsuits being filed. One lawsuit alone, they're suing for $6 trillion. And the reason why they're suing China for $6 trillion is because they feel that China are engaged in deceptive behavior, that they did not openly tell people what was going on. And as a result of that, this pandemic has gotten loose. Now, it's still up in the air about how it got loose. I mean, they were talking this past week in the fact it's a laboratory, because before initially they were talking about the wet markets. And now the word is coming out that it looks like it was in from a laboratory situation that may have gotten loose. So that's the conversation right now. So we're going to have to wait and see exactly what it is. Now, there's another lawsuit. Just, go ahead, Jamal.
Who's suing?
Some of the states. Some of the United States. Missouri is one of them. I think Minnesota is one of them. I'm trying to remember. There's a few states that are actually suing as well because it has cost them dearly as well. But there's also some law firms that are suing, private individuals that are suing. And the basis of another part of the lawsuit is negligence. So they're trying to say that China was negligent. But here's the real problem. Now, people have to understand something. These lawsuits, I hate to tell them, tell people, they're facing long odds on winning. The realities are whether or not we can sue a foreign government. So let me tell you what's going on. Way back in 1976, there was a law enacted called the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. And basically is what that gives. It gives a broad legal shield to governments from lawsuits from within the United States. And there's only a few exceptions to that. Now, the arguments that these people are making about China has to do with whether or not China was negligent. Because what I just told you, one of the causes of action is negligence, that they were negligent. Well, listen, they're going to have to show, unfortunately, that the Chinese did not take adequate precautions to prevent the spread of COVID-19. And that might not be enough for a successful lawsuit. It's just that simple. That's a high burden to show. Because if they come in and show that, hey, this is what we did, these are the precautions we had in place, where are you going to go with that? But this act alone, the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, believe me when I tell you, that's going to be a high hurdle for successful lawsuits, being able to sue foreign governments. And they put this in place, Jamal, for a reason. And like I said, this has been in place way back in 1976. So they may be doing this. Maybe some of these states are doing it because they're trying to show their constituents they're doing something. Maybe they feel they got some loophole situation. But only time is going to tell. If I had to guess, I don't think any of these lawsuits are going to get anywhere. I think we need to focus on what we need to do right now. I think we need to leave it up to the government to basically do sanctions. The different things that the government can do with another government, as opposed to private citizens that may up and just try to sue under these circumstances, especially for deception and negligence. I just don't see that going anywhere. But again, time will tell, and that's just my humble opinion. Does that sound logical to you, Jamal?
I'm sorry?
I said, does that sound logical to you?
No, it is. That's an interesting approach because, you know, hitting them in the pockets, you know, whether it's suing them or whether it's putting sanction on supplies that could come in from China, that's an interesting approach I didn't even think about. But, I guess there are ways that you can hurt somebody and get somebody to agree to a payment settlement other than court costs.
But you know what? I'm going to tell you, I think is what these countries should do. China's got a price to pay here. You don't have to sue them to get back. Why don't we pull the manufacturing away from China, which is one of the things I know that the administration has been talking about. Pull some of that manufacturing back into your own countries.
I agree.
That would hurt them financially. That to me is the way to go. And all these countries, if they band together and say, you know what, China, we think you really messed up with this. We're going to start manufacturing some of our own products within our own countries. I mean, China's smart. They have this outreach out there for manufacturing. We need to reconsider that. Some of these other countries need to reconsider that. And that to me can be a whole lot of punishment financially. That can hurt China. I don't know. That's just my opinion. We'll wait and see. I'm not in Washington, D.C. We'll see what happens. Okay, Johnny, I hope I answered your question. Let's move on. Jim, I know you have also focused your career and radio show on business. Now that it appears that we are gradually reopening businesses, do you have any words from business owners, managers, and employees? And that's signed by Susan from Long Beach. Susan, listen, I tell you, we can't get to all of that this week. But I went ahead and read your email this week so I can let the listeners know next week we will definitely be talking about these things because businesses now are starting to return and it's slowly but gradual. That's happening. We're looking at some of these states that are opening and, you know, they're letting businesses open back up. Whether or not I agree with it, don't agree with it. I don't know. Time will tell on all of that. The governors are each making these decisions for themselves, but we will be talking about safety tips. We will also be talking about the litigation piece because I've got some views that there's certain litigation that might start coming out against employers because plaintiff attorneys right now, they're not getting as many lawsuits. Everybody's out of work. Nobody's at work right now. So there's going to be issues, in my opinion, that are going to come up, and I'm going to be talking about those things next week. Because there's still things that employers can actually put in place, okay, to curtail some of this, to cut down on it. So we'll just have to wait and see. But, yes, we are going to be talking about some things. The news has actually talked about some things, Jamal, even in our own work environment, you know, the different precautions that we're taking even in our office. I'm sure you can shed some light on that as well. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, at any rate. We'll just have to wait and see. Okay, so that's my last of my emails. Right now, anybody that needs to call in, please call in 818-602-4929 if you have any comments you want to share. We are expecting a call from Dr. Potts, so we'll be taking his call as soon as he makes that call. In the interim, while he's calling, I got to tell you, Jamal, I looked up a number today to know approximately how many inmates we have that are incarcerated. You know what that number is?
It's a lot, man.
2.2 million.
Yeah, it's more than any other country in the world.
That's exactly right. We have more inmates than any other country in the world. So that is a whole lot of people. It's just the bottom line. And we start thinking about letting these people out, so to speak. That would be a lot of people that you're bringing back, you know, just because of this coronavirus, you know, et cetera. Now, you know, there are people out there that are arguing. They're actually arguing about this business, about the the jail system. They're talking about it's an incubator. So it's an incubator of death is some of the things that I picked up on. And I don't know, you know, they're saying, some of them are saying that it's death traps. And I don't know that I agree with the fact that these places are death traps. Look, these are people that have committed crimes. So if they've committed crimes or inside, whatever the case may be, they're there because they're there. So you deal with whatever comes down the pipe. Now, what they don't talk about, which I'm curious about, is what about the flu? More people die from the flu every year than some of these other things. Okay, we're getting a call right now. It's coming in. Hi. You're live on the air with Jim Potts. Can you hear me? Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air with Jim Potts. You have a comment or a question to share?
Yes, I'm invited to respond to some of his observations regarding the prison
system. Oh, okay. Is this Dr. Potts?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, how you doing, Dr. Potts? Appreciate you calling in. So, yeah, we'd be interested, and if you could, the issue that we've been confronted with, you and I have had some conversations this week on it, and giving the audience at least an opportunity to understand some of your background. I believe you were a former medical director at one time in the prison system, weren't you?
Well, not just a medical director. I have 15 years experience in the correctional system, whether jail, county, state facilities, working the frontline intake blocks all the way up to corporate medical director.
Okay, and I know that you've been an expert witness in some cases as well regarding things within the correctional system as well, correct?
Yes, I have.
All right. So look, the question that people are posing to us right now are, is this business about the early release of prisoners? And from our perspective, we've talked on the air about the fact that why is it necessary to release these people? Could you share some things? I know we've talked about some things, so I'm kind of going to give you a free rein here. So pitch in for us and let us know the inner workings of this system.
Well, when you speak of early release, there has been a consistent movement to decrease the number of people within the correctional system. As you know, the United States locks up more people than anyone else in the world. And there is some impression that when you're behind the wall, that you're somehow separated from society. In effect, you're not. You have work release programs, custody officials move in and out within the facilities, people are being transported back and forth for court. So it's not really a closed system. And I've heard you make a comment earlier about concerns about them being, I think it was referred to as incubators of death.
Right. There's people out there that are saying that those are incubators of death. And for death and disease.
Well, no, I wouldn't call it that. Now, within the correctional environment, let's establish one thing first and foremost, that the whole point of the judicial system as it relates to prisons, whether state, local, county, etc., is public safety. Medical fits within the context of public safety. So we provide a necessary and adequate care to individuals within a correctional environment, because it's long been established in federal law that healthcare cannot be used as an extension of a punishment for people who are locked up. So necessary and adequate care is defined by the federal system, and the states follow suit, and local jurisdictions have to establish policies and procedures related to that. Not only as it protects the individual, but as it protects people working within a correctional environment. So when we're talking about incubators of death, and that is very graphic, there is some history perhaps that might relate to that. And as it pertains to the coronavirus, there was or there is what's called multidrug-resistant TB. Well, multidrug-resistant TB, if you follow a root cause analysis, actually came out of the correctional environment because of the necessity to treat people with tuberculosis. Well, the problem was that people would get up and would get into jail or prison, and you have a 6 to 9 month treatment or a 1 year treatment, depending on what regimen you use. And sometimes people are released before the treatment is complete. Well, there was no connection to the community. Then they would get locked up again. So you end up restarting the treatment. If you do that over and over with antibiotics, you end up building resistance. So multi-drug resistant TB was not because you had people locked up in prison, but because you didn't have policies and procedures that connected to a continuity of care with the community. Now, how does that relate to, oh, by the way, subsequent to that, if you initiate a treatment for TB, you are referred to the local health department, and compliance is assured in that regard so that you don't develop resistance and create a threat to the general public. Now, when you talk about something like a virus, whether it's person to person through breathing or whether it's airborne, the prison is not an isolated environment, as I alluded to earlier. Individuals come in and out for various reasons. You cannot deny them their right to due process, keep them from going to court. The correctional officers or the prison staff, they're not on lockdown. If you have an institution like a college, you can take a definitive step, close the college. You have alternatives, such as distance learning. Within a correctional environment, that's a lot more difficult. Now, within that environment, there are measures that can be taken. You have regulations that support an infection control program. It has to be followed, and those things are audited to ensure compliance, whether you're working in the kitchen or whether you are dealing with communicable disease like other respiratory endemics or pandemics, such as routine influenza or special cases like SARS or MERS. Those with the capability and the staffing will also exercise CDC guidelines within those facilities that relate to frequent cleaning of contact surfaces. So individuals are going to be coming in and out based on due process, going to court, work release, and back and forth within your system. So you cannot eliminate totally exposure either within or without when you have a respiratory problem like this. The real question is, how do you develop a correctional environment or a penal system that has the ability to adapt as other systems do, such as universities or your workplaces, like malls, etc., where you are at liberty to shut them down and enforce a kind of quarantine in place that's elected. So when you look at that, how do you develop a system moving forward that will let you adapt to that? Now, within an organization like a correctional environment, a prison, whether it's state, local, or federal, you have a staffing ratio that is necessary for safety within the facility. And this speaks directly to numbers. Early release isn't new. California in 2011 released ton of people because prisons are overcrowded. Overcrowding is a significant issue. So when you look at what goes on, we have to rethink what it is that we're doing in terms of reentry programs the British Isles implemented something. Okay, we need to decrease the number of people because the staffing ratio is unsafe. So you put ankle bracelets on people, and at the first sign of trouble, you rearrest them. Now, I don't know what's planned here on a state-by-state basis, but it requires a lot of creativity with judges, local enforcement, and what do we really have within a community for reentry that will maintain some degree of security.
So do you think that they are...
Public safety is very important. Go ahead.
Yeah. So do you think that they're using this as another possible excuse, so to speak? Because if you know they're already doing it for overcrowding, are they going to use this as an excuse, you know, for their agenda or just getting people on the outside? I mean, the ACLU in Texas wants, there's 140,000 prisoners in Texas. The ACLU wants all 140,000 released. And that to me is ridiculous.
That certainly there is a lot of, that's over the top. Once again, right. Public safety is the primary, that's the mission. And anyone like that, anyone that proposes something like that is overlooking all of the work that it takes to keep the public safe with something related to a virus that each individual who is exposed within 90 days will develop long-term immunity. They're a high-risk individual who will not make it through that 90 days when the natural biology will create a shield against a further exposure to it. And that's the case even with the influenza virus, which goes through a major mutation every 20 years. So in terms of that seems to be exploitation for another reason. Public safety should come first.
So in the early release, I would imagine you don't necessarily agree with the early release just based on this COVID-19.
Not based on the virus alone. Not based on that alone. Now, within these environments, that's a complicated issue. For example, there are some places that have a third of their staff out on an enforceable 14-day quarantine because of protocols that are set up. Now, that's different from somebody getting the flu and deciding, well, I'm well enough to go to work. That's different. If you were going to put everyone out every year for 14 days who got the flu, then you would have the same kind of thing. You would be short-staffed to handle the number of people. Now, when we talk about that staffing, that kind of hit on your staff, 20%, 30%, that's an incredible number of people. You need people that are able to transport as well as keep other people safe within a correctional environment. So staffing ratios are very important to maintain security in the system. Releasing 40,000 people. I certainly don't see any justification for that.
Jamal, you had a question?
Yeah, I have a question. Because the prisons are so overcrowded, so if there is a coronavirus outbreak in the prison system, how would that work with getting them medical attention as quickly as possible if the number starts climbing up? Because it doesn't seem to me that there will be enough medical staff to take care of those prisoners like they would if they're, you know, as if people on the outside has more potential for medical care.
Well, you're addressing the same issues that colleges and universities did. It's not possible to keep people close together without increasing the risk of contagion. So you close those places. You cannot seriously close the prison to do that. So you're not going to have the staff, and you don't have the space to put everybody in a single cell. Not only that, inmates within a correctional environment are part of the operation. They assist with the cooking. They assist with taking food to cells, to inmates on medical units, into isolation, et cetera. They're moving throughout. They perform the infection control task of keeping the area's contact surfaces clean. So you can't have people that close together in a contagion, have them all be sick and still be able to run one of these facilities. So you're really in, it's pushing the agenda in terms of rethinking what it is that we do within the correctional environment. And I don't think it's a crisis in that regard. There are great minds that can be pulled together judicially, legislatively, and within the correctional environment to come up with alternatives, be they ankle bracelets. In other words, we develop emergency medical response protocols for many different things. The coronavirus has put front and center, what is our emergency medical response protocol going to be for environments like this that cannot be managed in the same way other congregate settings, such as colleges, such as shopping malls, etc., where you can just mandate that they close and people self-quarantine. Now, are they, what did you call it before? Incubators of disease? The disease is in the community. When you have something that's airborne.
Yeah. Right.
When you talk about something that's airborne, okay, so where are you going to put people where there isn't air? You have to come up with a better plan than send them back out into the neighborhood. What are you going to do then? Now, when we speak in terms of the old, the infirm, and they need to make space in the jail, so let them go. Well, one of the safety issues is, it's not whether or not they can commit a crime, but where can they go? You've been locked up for 20 years. Where are you going to send them to self-quarantine? Where are you going to send the homeless to self-quarantine?
Well, just to be clear, I'm not the one that coined the phrase incubators for disease and death. It was the Attorney General for New Jersey.
That's a very colorful quote. I'm not saying that it originally was you. The virus lives within people. They don't. It's not within a prison. The issue with the prison is a congregate setting where you have people close together, like the subways of New York, like mass transit. Any place where you have mass transit and people in close quarters, you're going to have, is the New York City subway system an incubator of disease? Well, you might argue that it is, if it's respiratory.
Well, some of these states are starting to open back up, Charles. Their arguments are like Georgia. I was in touch with one of our good friends in Georgia, in Atlanta, and he doesn't necessarily agree that Georgia is opening up too soon, because since I have you on the phone, that some of these states that are starting to open up, some of their positions are, look, we're a spread out rural state. People don't see each other all the time. We're so spread out that these are now issues. Now, some of these Midwestern states, as an example, they've got less than 1,000 cases. They're like, why do we need to keep our state shut down at that point? People have to use common sense as well.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And I don't really have any concerns about that, because you're looking at population density.
Right.
You're looking at, if the population is not dense, and it goes again to congregate settings, how close are people together? There are some places here in Florida where you can't even see your next neighbor. And many rural places, like 80% of the people in the world live in coastal regions. You have much less of an issue with people that are inland from the coast, since 20% of your population on the average is there.
You know, I was talking to one of my law enforcement buddies, one of the guys that helps me with my active shooter training. He and I were on the phone a couple of days ago, and he's telling me that when he's on patrol now, they're sitting 8 hours watching this. I don't want to get into what area they're watching to make sure people are not gathering too close together. I mean, you don't think about these things, but an eight-hour shift to make sure people aren't congregating together, to me, I don't want to say it's ridiculous, but that's what's going on.
Well, there's a pandemic and there's a pandemic. And by that, I mean that the way the information is being disseminated by pen, so to speak, is keeping the focus at an area that doesn't necessarily look at the biology that we're dealing with. Your body has an immediate reaction to something that's new, and it can be intense. And there are individuals who will not survive the intensity of that initial presentation. The vast majority of people will develop long-term immunity, which is the other part of your immune system, and it takes about 90 days for that to happen. Now, we're really not tracking convalescent titers in individuals. And there's so much that's new about this, we're not even sure in terms of sensitivity and specificity. It's certainly not 100%. So I'm not sure that I think it's of any value watching people to eliminate congregate settings, because ultimately the saturation by definition in a pandemic means that it's going to reach everyone.
Yeah,
so,
well, again,
your biology will manage it.
It's a lack of education. People aren't going to understand it the same way you are. General population has a panic and a fear about this thing all the way across the board. I mean, we go out. I mean, everybody's wearing their masks now. I mean, it's crazy when you go out there and see all these people wearing these masks and everything. Well, people are doing what they're supposed to do. We want to get under this curve. We want to try to put this behind us as much as possible.
Well, let's talk about the mask for a moment. The mask is not protecting you as much as it's protecting somebody else. And by that I mean, to the extent that it's a barrier for droplets to move from you to somebody else, it's okay.
Right.
Even those masks should be replaced or should be cleaned. And if you're wearing disposable masks, they should be disposed of certainly no later than a day, which is another issue. If you put masks on everybody in corrections, there's about, you know, you're looking at 1.5 million people across the country, 1.5 million masks per day. You can't make them fast enough to keep up with that.
That's
just in the correctional environment.
They got people out there now making masks and some of the people. Yeah. And they're not medical masks.
Right.
These are just like scarves.
Yeah, no, you can put your T-shirt over your head if you want.
Okay. I have a question.
But if you're going to use something like that, that kind of material, you need about 8 layers.
Oh, really?
So if you got N95 tests, you don't have enough of them. So do they beat a blank? Yes, they do, because they prevent droplets from going from you to somebody else. Now, the size of a virus is measured in microns or nanometers. They're very, very small. That 2 layers is not enough to actually stop a virus, although it may stop moisture that's containing a virus. And the 6 feet distance, the 6 foot distance, keeping surfaces clean, using a good, you know, cleaner and distance, and avoiding, you know, physical contact with high risk things like, you know, shopping carts, clean them off, wash your hands, hand washing, etc. Do the things you need to do to protect you that you would in any viral season. But people should not be thinking that that mask makes them bulletproof. It does help, yes. It does. It's better than nothing. But it's not as good as an N95 mask, and you just on it.
Hey, I had a question,
and then we're going to wrap it up. Okay, so Jamal, what was your question real quick? Okay.
Is there any data that shows that an inmate would have a lesser chance of contracting a virus outside than they would on the inside of prison?
No. Actually, you're better. Prison is a controlled, infection-controlled environment in terms of cleaning surfaces and the opportunity to monitor temperatures and picking up contagion earlier and keeping an eye on high-risk individuals. A lot different out in the general.
Got it.
Well, Dr. Potts, we really do appreciate you calling in, and hopefully, you know, the listeners will have gained from that. You certainly have cleared up some things for me, And you'll never hear me mention about, you know, prison systems being an incubator for a disease. That's for sure. Again, that was a quote from the New Jersey Attorney General. At any rate, so from that perspective, we'll wait and see. And again, we appreciate your coming in. So thanks a lot.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share. Okay. Bye now.
All right. Just go ahead. Bye. Take care. Well, Jamal, I don't know. That was very interesting for sure. You know, I mentioned about the mask, and he mentioned about the fact that it looks like those masks, all these people are taking, don't really get us anywhere. You know, so from that perspective, so that's interesting. Hey, we're getting another caller right now, so let's see what we got.
Yeah.
All right. Hi, you're on the air with Jim Potts, LA Talk Radio. You have a comment or a question that you'd like to share?
Do I have a comment or a question I'd like to share?
Yeah. Well,
what is it you're talking about? All right. So look.
Okay, now I get this now. Okay, guys. I want to say who's this calling, but now I know who's calling.
You know who's calling.
How you doing, Ralph?
I'm good, big brother. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. How's everything in New York?
It's quiet because we're all, you know, self quarantining and so forth and so on. So it's pretty quiet here. But other than that, it's fine. I was listening to your show, and you know, I know that you were talking about the topic of the day, which is obviously the, you know, COVID-19. And, you know, all the ins and outs of what that has brought upon us as a nation, and I guess, as a, you know, globally. And one of the topics, of course, has been this thing about, you know, early release of inmates and or prisoners, either from county facilities, federal facilities, or state facilities. So, I mean, I don't know. I listened to, you know, your back and forth. Well, I listened to you back and forth with Charles about it. You know, and he kind of gave his, you know, his perspective, at least from someone who's worked on the medical side of things. But as someone myself who worked in law enforcement for, you know, 30 years, you know, I won't say I don't have a different outlook, you know, than he does, because I think, you know, I think he more or less would agree. You know, I just seem to have an issue with, you know, the decision to, you know, willy-nilly across the board decide that you're going to, you know, release 100,000 prisoners because of the fear of, you know, an outbreak of the, you know, the coronavirus in a containment facility like that. You know, I'm just not so sure that that's, you know, that that's necessarily the solution.
Uncle Rob, what do you think about releasing lower level offenders?
Well, let me ask you this, Jamal. What, in your mind, because I think that this goes to state of mind for a lot of people. In your mind, what do you consider to be someone who's a lower level offender?
Somebody, okay, I would say all the way from like a first time offender, you know, whether it's a burglar, shoplifter, drug dealer, anything like that. First time offender.
Well, if it's somebody who is, let's say it's somebody who's in a county facility and they're locked up because they couldn't make bail. And, you know, the crime that they've committed, let's say the scenario that you paint, it's a first time, you know, it's a first time offense. It's a non-violent offense. It's not something that would necessarily make him a threat, a physical threat to, you know, to law abiding citizens and so forth and so on. Then I would probably say I would be okay with that. But, and again, as I said earlier, the thought of just deciding, you know, across the board to start releasing people who are in county lockups or state facilities and so forth, that's problematic. Because if you look at the county facility, you have people who are locked up in county facilities. I don't know how it works in California, but I can tell you in New York, you have people that are locked up in a county facility that are serving time for a conviction, let's say, of a low-level felony or a misdemeanor, which, you know, a misdemeanor in New York State, you know, you can be locked up for up to a year. So let's say you've committed an act, and now you're locked up, and your sentence is 6 months or 8 months or 9 months or a year. Well, okay, so you're now in a county facility, but let's just say that you were convicted of that, of whatever it might have been, but maybe that's not necessarily what you committed. So let's say we're looking at someone who committed an assault. And if you committed even if you're a first-time offender, if you committed a felony assault, which would include serious physical injury or weapons use or something like that, or it was done during the commission of another crime, like a burglary, okay, but it's your first time being arrested for that, sometimes the district attorney will then plead the case down to a lower, a lesser offense. That's what you're convicted of, and that's what you're spending time for. But that's not necessarily the crime that you committed. Now, I have a problem with that.
Yeah, Ralph, okay. I agree with you. California is the same way that you just described. For us, misdemeanors are up to a year. Felonies are over a year. And you're right. You know, that's a good point that you're making, is that they do plead it down. They plead it down all the time. You know, a lot of these public defenders, a lot of these defense attorneys, they all know the prosecution. So sometimes you're right. The guy could have committed a higher crime, so to speak, but they pled it down to something where their client's going to maybe do, you know, less than a year, and they spend that time in a county lockup. Now they turn around and get released because they're in a county lockup. And now this guy was technically a violent offender. Now when he gets out, okay, he commits some of those same things. Matter of fact, they had that situation in Texas. The guy turned around and he did. They let him out. He turns around after he gets out, goes to his mother-in-law's house, goes to his ex-wife's house. Those are all the reasons why he was up, you know, inside in the first place. And he goes after them because they were the reasons why he was in there doing some time. You know, these guys, I hate to say it.
And let's not forget that he hasn't done his time yet. So this, you know, in the scenario that Jamal was referring to, it's a first-time offense. This guy's in there. Okay, he's been in there for 2 weeks. Okay, after being convicted of whatever and committing whatever, and he hasn't had enough time to even give any serious thought to what he had done or the consequences behind it before he's being released again. So,
and Charles made a good point too, Ralph, with the fact that we're looking at this confinement, but these individuals get out to go for court appearance. You know that. You were in law enforcement. Yep. So these guys are back and forth as well. So they're being exposed. They're bringing things back. I mean, to me, if you release these people, hell, they still may get the virus after they get out. What's the difference? At least they're inside. They're going to get treated. Outside, if they don't have insurance, who's going to be paying for that? I mean, if we look at it from a cost-benefit standpoint, you know. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
But, yeah, so, Ralph, go ahead. I'm sorry.
If you're asking me my opinion, first of all, we won't get into a discussion about, you know, the justice system and, you know, who it favors, and are prisons overcrowded? Yes, they are. They are overcrowded. So we don't need to necessarily get into that discussion. But if we're talking about the context of this, which is, we have this virus that is, you know, is now, you know, it's a respiratory illness, it's easily spread and so forth and so on. Yeah, you know, we have to try and, you know, and minimize that by releasing prisoners? The answer is absolutely not. That's my opinion.
Well, Ralph,
I don't think it's
going to
make significant of enough. Go ahead.
No, I wanted to tell you that I did appreciate that, the comment and also your input. See, we're getting ready to have to close out, but I appreciated you calling in and giving that the information to us. And certainly you gave us some things to think about as well. So I appreciate that. Appreciate Dr. Potts, our older brother, calling in as well. So thanks a lot, Ralph. Right. Nice talking to you.
All right, man. All right, be well.
All right, take care. Well, there it is, Jamal. Both of your uncles called in today, and hopefully the listeners appreciated getting some information from two different experts, so to speak, on these different issues. And hopefully, moving forward, there's people out there listening that might make a difference with some of these programs and things that they're trying to push out there. And then we'll see. You got anything in closing, Jamal?
Hey, according to Dr. Potts, it's safer to stay inside, so stay inside.
All right, we'll take the advice. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts and Jamal Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Hey, be sure to join us next week, and do us a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, hey, be aware, be vigilant, and be safe. Until next week, guys. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.